session number 7266, Reel 8.
General Lloyd, Reel 8. General, you've given a brief account of your journey home from the defensive line on the Braille. Could you give me a bit more detail about how you travelled and what happened to you on the way to the coast?
Yes. I told you that I handed over my scratch gunner battery on the line of the Braille. We were obviously thought to be sent into reserve from that point. And we went back in motor transport, lorries and staff cars, from the Braille to Rouen into what I suppose was a base tented camp in the Forêt de Vouvray. We, as far as I can remember, we spent a night there, during which, in the early hours of the morning, we were woken up by rifle and machine gun fire, and some of the bullets went through the tents, the bell tents in which we were billeted. There was a very strange rumour at that point, which I've never subsequently had an opportunity of checking. The rumour was that the firing was from a Portuguese regiment, of all things, in the very next door camp. Well, of course, the Portuguese were allies of ours, that long-standing Treaty of Alliance. But whether or not there were any Portuguese troops there or not, I've never been able to check. But it's very interesting that that should have been the rumour, I think. However, after this one night spent in camp at the Forêt de Vouvray, we were entrained and sent right down to Saint-Nazaire. And although I don't think I ever heard anything specific, again, the rumour was, which I suppose was reasonably correct, that we were... the intention was that we should be evacuated from Saint-Nazaire and brought back to England via that route. Actually, when we arrived at Saint-Nazaire, right on the quay, by rail, literally as we disembarked from the train, the troopship Lancastria was lying out about, I suppose, half a mile, and it was almost immediately dive-bombed. And we had the horrifying experience of watching this ship suffer hit after hit and eventually keeled over and sank with a very large number of troops already embarked on her. And we, of course, were very lucky to escape. I think I read subsequently that it was an act of official policy that the sinking of the Lancastria should not be published, and I don't think it was published until the following year. Certainly, when we eventually got back into England and got talking to the troops at home and the civilian population, they had no idea whatsoever that the Lancastria had in fact been sunk. Do you want to ask me anything else about that?
Yes. When it was actually being attacked, what sort of aircraft were...
Oh, Stukas, dive bomber. It was all dive bombing. The usual stuff that we'd been subjected to ourselves, you know, up country. And I don't know what the range of a Stuka is. I never did learn that. But certainly the Lancastria was sunk by dive bombing.
Did it have any anti-aircraft defence?
No, not that we could see. I suppose there were some Lewis guns on board and so on, but we wouldn't necessarily have seen those. You see.
Was there any attempt to rescue the
There was a shoal of small boats went out to her, and we saw... There were, of course, French troops on board her as well, being evacuated. Some of them were got on board, but we were... very hastily re-embarked on our train, and the train pulled out of the port.
Had you been attacked by enemy aircraft on your way down to Saint Nazaire?
No, we hadn't. It was a very, very slow, halting journey from from Rouen down to Saint Nazaire, and took, I think, about a day and a half. I made a note that we got to Saint Nazaire on the 17th of June, and we were travelling back northeast to Rouen again by the 19th of June.
So it's a couple of days altogether. Sorry, who was actually controlling your use of the train? Was there a movement staff at Rouen?
No British movement staff. It was, as far as I remember, all our movement was in the hands of the French. Not military, but civilian.
So you were still effectively under French command?
Yes, under French command, yes. Mind you, I had no knowledge then, and I've never heard anything subsequently to give me any sort of a clue under whose orders we made this movement from Rouen down to Saint Nazaire and back again and then on to Cherbourg.
I presume then that you were fairly ignorant of the general situation when you were making this journey.
Completely. Up to the time we got to Rouen, we were fairly clued up because we had the advantage of the BBC and also French broadcasts on sound radio. But militarily, we were completely out of communication from the time we got to Rouen until we went to Saint Nazaire, back again, and then got to Cherbourg.
Did this ignorance and uncertainty have any effect on the morale of the troops?
Well, it's very hard to answer that question. I think I've already given you the general atmosphere under which we operated, which was... I can say this quite genuinely. It was an atmosphere of complete good humour and confidence. And never, from the moment we started our so-called battle, right until the time we got back to England and so on, did we ever have the slightest idea that we were really defeated. But the situation was intensely confused all the while, and our information was a strange mixture of direct orders from whoever we were under command at the time, telling us this, that, and the other, and also listening to the broader picture which was being painted by the BBC. I do remember that we had portable radio sets, and even at that time, and we were able to listen to the BBC from the start to the finish.
So you're never completely out of touch with the homeland?
Never completely out of touch. But, of course, as you know, the BBC stories were censored, so we didn't get the real picture. However, you asked me about morale, and I can tell you that... morale was very, very high all through. Have I told you about being in the Estaminet and hearing the news of the French collapse?
I remember you saying that the troops immediately started singing Roll Out
Roll
the Barrel.
Roll Out the Barrel, that's right. And the French were all standing up and weeping. And of course, the French radio was playing the Marseillaise. Well, that gives you our general attitude, I think, as well as anything possibly could. However, that's not to say that we weren't at times very, very frightened, of course, because especially after seeing the sinking of the Lancastria, I think that brought home more than anything else the power of the dive bomber.
But you may have been frightened, but you weren't demoralised.
No, certainly not. No, not at any time.
It's interesting the two can coexist, a high state of morale and a high level of fear as well.
It is, isn't it? Yes, it is.
So what happens after you got back into Rouen? Were you kept on the train or were you loaded off?
Well, we came back, I think, through... I remember going through... now, what's the place where they have the motor race? Le Mans.
Le Mans.
We came back through Le Mans and up to just outside Rouen, where there's an enormous marshalling yard, and the train just pulled in there and then pulled out again, and we were detrained at a place of which I don't know the name, but it would be somewhere round about Bayeux or somewhere like that. And we were met by motor transport again, and we fought a sort of half-baked rearguard action all up the Cotentin Peninsula to Cherbourg. And I remember learning subsequently that the German divisional commander who actually chased us up the Cherbourg Peninsula was Rommel. My first brush with Rommel. But that was only knowledge after the event.
Beginning of a long and happy partnership.
Yeah, long, happy partnership, that's quite right.
But you say he was chasing up the peninsula. Were his troops pressing hard on
him? No, not really. Not really. You mustn't regard this in the light of a proper fighting rearguard action. It wasn't anything like that at all. I think I indicated earlier that the general impression that I had was that the Germans were just about as surprised by their success as we were at their success. And I think that's a pretty fairly accurate statement of the facts. I would call it a half-baked rearguard action. And my most vivid memory of it, in fact, was getting onto the docks at Cherbourg, and as you know, there's some heights which overlook Cherbourg, and Rommel's people were coming over the top of the hill when we were down in the dock area. We were pushing equipment as fast as we could into the drink, and disabling it. Rommel's people were firing at us. We came off on the cruiser Penelope, and the cruiser was firing at Rommel's people over our heads up the hill. And I remember, as a gunner, I remember being absolutely shattered at the enormous muzzle blast from a cruiser's guns.
Was this an 8-inch cruiser or a 6-inch?
She was, I think, the Penelope. She was subsequently called the Pepper Pot, and she was sunk, I think, in Valletta Harbour later on in the war. I should think she was probably an 8-inch gun cruiser, but I'm not sure.
When you say Rommel's people, did he have armoured vehicles up on the heights or just infantry?
I don't know what sort of division it was. I believe German motorised divisions had some tanks with them, and my impression was that it was a motorised division. In fact, I think it must have been. Otherwise, it wouldn't have been so far ahead of the main German force.
So there were actually German tanks and armoured cars, were there?
Well, it was artillery that was firing at us.
Artillery?
It was divisional artillery, I should think, firing at us.
Did they do you very much damage?
No, no. The town was, I think, fairly badly hit. It was certainly on fire in places.
Presumably, by this stage, by the time you were fighting this rear guard or delaying action up the peninsula, you had merely infantry, purely small arms.
Purely small arms, that's right. That's right.
So how...
Well, whoever we joined up with, and I'm afraid I can't tell you anything about that because I just don't remember, but there must have been some heavier stuff around, but not very much, just a small amount.
Presumably the Germans weren't desperately keen to get involved in heavy fighting because you were in the process of evacuation anyway.
Yes, that's right. As I've said earlier, it wasn't in any way a close follow-up. It was, I don't know what word to use for it, it was a tentative follow-up.
So they're really shepherding you rather than...
Yes,
you.
But until we actually got concentrated in the dock area, then, of course, we were a pretty fair target. So they fairly went at us.
But presumably, again, they didn't score many direct hits because they were themselves being... disconcerted by fire from Penelope.
No hits at all that I could see. Mm. Just desultory firing, you know, at the dock area, at the town. You probably know Cherbourg, do you? It's a fairly compact place.
Well, it's dominated by the fort on the left-hand side if you're looking up from the harbour.
That's right, and that's right.
One would imagine that if they'd actually got themselves securely lodged there, they could really have dominated there.
Oh, yes, they could. The but they weren't in any sort of static positions by the time we were out, you know. Well, we pulled out, as I told you, on the Penelope. The ship was completely crowded with evacuated soldiers, French as well as English. And it was about halfway across the channel that we met the... tugs with lighters in tow, all in black and yellow stripes, indicating that they contained gas. And we encountered them just about halfway across the channel. Our destination was Southampton, and presumably the barges were being towed to Southampton, although I'm not sure about that. But they're certainly going in that direction. I was told by an officer of the Penelope that the lighters had been taken in tow on the... somewhere on the Bay of Biscay. So I suppose they must have been down somewhere around about Bordeaux. I'm not absolutely certain about there, but they were somewhere on that shore.
So presumably there was a dump or a depot.
Well, that's where the line of bases, the main bases were along that coast. You know, ammunition, vehicles, guns and so on, stores. They were all on that coast. So I think that's pretty accurate. They must have come from there. However, it's interesting that they must have come right round into the channel. So I suppose they would have started off. I'm talking now about round about a week. We landed at Southampton on the 28th of June, which was a good while after France capitulated. So if we met them in the Channel, say on the 27th of June, they would have started off round about, what, the 23rd, 24th or 25th, wouldn't they?
Fair to assume they would have been on the sea for 2 or 3 days at least.
Well, I think they must have been. They must have been. I, this is the first time I've ever thought about this, as a matter of fact. That's why I was rather slow in doing the calculation. But anyway, that's the general story.
Were they escorted?
Not as far as I know. Not as far as I know. That is not to say, of course, that they weren't being escorted. All I can say is that we were so fascinated by seeing these things. Incidentally, that's the first I'd ever heard that gas was contained in lighters and that they were marked in that particular fashion. That, of course, came from the Penelope's crew. It was they who told us. And we were so fascinated in watching these things that I really can't remember whether they were being escorted or not.
Had you previously had any idea that there was gas available?
Well, I don't think... This is one of those areas in which subsequent knowledge is very apt to overlay actual memory. And I think I must tell you that there hadn't been any discussion at all, as far as I can remember, as to the possible use of gas or not. And I think that's absolutely right, as a matter of fact, because we were so shattered at seeing these beetle-like barges that I think that I would have a memory of it if there'd been any previous discussion.
So all your training had been for defensive chemical warfare?
Yes, well, such as it was. I'm not going to say there was any real training for...
But there was the occasional gas mask.
Well, the occasional gas mask, really, no. But I don't ever remember. For example, when I was a gunner, I'm talking about just before the war now, I don't ever remember operating guns in action, wearing gas masks or anything of that sort. In fact, I'm certain that we didn't.
What happened to you when you got into port in Southampton?
Well, we were very, very well received. In fact, our reception at Southampton was probably the most impressive part of this particular period of the war. We came alongside, we were disembarked. I remember there was a little ceremony when we said goodbye to the captain and officers of the Penelope, and we were piped ashore at the dock railway station. There was a special train already drawn up, and we were received by the port commandant, who was a naval officer, and also the station master, and hosts of helpers, you know, who gave the troops sandwiches and coffee and so on and so forth, refreshments. And I remember being given a bottle of whiskey, which was greatly appreciated. And we were very comfortably entrained and sent off, not knowing what our destination was. But the reception was absolutely superb, very heartening after all those uncertain months, you know, weeks.
Presumably you must have been fairly hungry when you got ashore.
Well, the Penelope was very good to us. They gave us a meal as soon as we got on board. I don't think we were very hungry, but of course as you probably know, relief is a great is a great lightener of the burden, and we certainly had a very good meal on the train.
Where did you eventually fetch up on your special train?
Pardon?
Where did you fetch up on your special train?
We went right up to the north to Hexham. Well, first of all, Newcastle. And as a matter of fact, I had never been to the northeast of England before, and I was immensely impressed with Newcastle, immensely impressed. We had a civic reception. Everybody was kindness itself. And the first night after disembarkation, we were accommodated in Fenwick Barracks, which I think would have been the Northumberland Fusilier Barracks, I think. Fenwick Barracks. Oh, a splendid reception. The mayor was there and the mayoress and all the civilian helpers and so on. And I must say we were in a pretty ghastly state too. Of course, our uniforms were in a frightful state, and we ourselves weren't any too clean. We had a splendid time at the Fenwick Barracks where we were re-equipped.
How long did it take you to recover from the physical effects of the campaign?
Well, I can't remember how many days we spent, but I think we spent 3 or 4 days at Fenwick Barracks, and then we were sent out to Hexham, which, of course, is not very far away, just up the valley from Newcastle. At Hexham, we were splendidly received and accommodated. They hadn't had any troops there before, and the word was concentrated, but of course we were a very half-baked division. You know, as I've told you, we were a duplicate division. We were actually concentrated at Hexham, and gradually, the various units were sent away to this, that, and the other location. The divisional commander, General Peter, he was up there for a while with us, but he was then sent off to command another division. And I was eventually